3 months later. V plus 9. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. Although dubbed the wedding of the century by a celebrity-obsessed media which had been longing for this day since the unlikely coupling first became news, the matrimonial union of Dan McCarthy and Emma Ford was a deliberately low-key affair. Their lives had been a whirlwind in the months since arrival day, as the monumental day when not one but two alien motherships arrived on Earth had come to be known. Dan's position as the ICA's chief planetary liaison brought incredible media responsibilities for the first few weeks in particular, and since then he had been back and forth to New York on multiple occasions to oversee votes on several resolutions. The most interesting and headline-grabbing of these regarded the upcoming assistance mission to New Kerguelen, which would see an extensive international team of engineers and scientists directly assess the planet's so-called Great Shelter, before returning shortly thereafter to assist in its repair. Four humans currently lived on New Kerguelen as ambassadors, two leading scientists from former GCC member states and two from former ELF nations. The GCC and ELF no longer functioned as they once had, with both having been consumed by the ICA in a manner that wasn't completely unlike when Earth's major national space agencies had been consumed by the ill-fated GSC. With the ELF serving as the ICA's eastern division and the GCC its counterpart in the west, there was no longer a need for John Cole's previous position of ELF Western Secretary. As someone with a foot in both camps, trusted by Ding for joining the ELF in the first place, and trusted by Western leaders for the role he played in subduing Jack Neal during his discussions with the squadron, Cole had hoped to be selected as one of the ICA's ambassadors to New Kerguelen. This was unacceptable for obvious reasons, primarily Cole's well-earned reputation for making culturally offensive faux pas and rash decisions. And it took an intervention from William Godfrey to talk him out of applying for the role. Godfrey promised to assist Cole in a return to frontline British politics, something the latter wanted more than anything but knew he couldn't successfully pursue without his former boss's support. Crisis after crisis had conveniently befallen the lame duck Prime Minister David Hurst in the interim, and Cole was simply biding his time until Hurst, a non-entity on the international stage and barely viewed with any more respect at home, finally bit the dust. Two very special guests of honor sat in the front row alongside Emma and Dan's closest friends and family, and no one was in any doubt that this would be the first human wedding attended by extraterrestrials. Dan thought it might have been funny to talk the familiar messengers into wearing specially tailored tuxedos, but although Emma laughed at the idea, she quickly vetoed it. The tunics were simply what the messengers wore, as she told him. Anything else would just look wrong. The wedding wasn't an official state occasion or even a particularly large gathering, but it was exactly what they both wanted. The small guest list was one of few compromises, with the only individuals present who weren't close friends or family being the unomittable William Godfrey and Ding Ziyang, Dan's colleagues at the ICA, as well as the increasingly amiable President Slater. Clark was Dan's best man, of course, and Tara, Emma's maid of honor. Their budding and potentially life-complicating romance was the best-kept secret in Colorado, with an unbreakable agreement in place to keep it from Dan and Emma until after they returned from their honeymoon at the very least. After 3 months, it felt like anything but a casual fling, but it still wouldn't have been fair to do anything to distract from the wedding until it was all in the rearview. There was no commercial media presence in Eastview, and an exclusion zone was in force around Phil Norris's property, with drone watchers on duty and a bounty on offer for any they successfully spotted in the skies overhead. A large public security operation was also underway, even though the once troublesome group of anti-contact terrorists, known as GeoSovs, had been positively routed by a unified international crackdown that left no stone unturned and left nothing to chance. Contacts and text messages from Jack Neal's phone provided many initial leads that exposed the GeoSov's global web of cells and sympathizers, and Poppy Bradshaw was now just one of several hundred incarcerated former members having been caught red-handed by a string of messages which confirmed her involvement in the plot to take President Slater hostage. Tara, for her part, had firmly requested that those who knew about her own kidnapping kept it to themselves. As she told the few who knew, the last thing she wanted to do was live her life as a victim in everyone else's eyes. She had survived Jack Neal's demented scheme, and she refused to be defined by it. As the wedding ceremony continued, it became clear to the guests that the couple had written their own vows. Emma delivered hers first in a voice that almost sounded nervous, which made the sweet words all the sweeter in Dan's ears. His second thought, after how wonderful they were, was that his own were going to struggle to follow them. "It really wasn't easy figuring out the best way to word everything I want to say," he began, glad he'd decided to open with some humor. "Mainly because my usual speechwriter has been tied up with a project of her own." Emma's lips crinkled in amusement. She wore a one-of-a-kind, terra couture dress, modern and elegant, which would become an instant classic. "It's also difficult to know where to start," Dan went on, "because the world has thrown a lot at us in the past 2 years, and when that wasn't enough, the universe decided to throw a comet at us, too." Clark roared in laughter, wondering where the hell Dan had found all of these lines. "But we didn't just survive everything that came our way. No, we got stronger and we got closer. When you said yes, I thought I had everything I wanted. When I found out we're going to have a family, I knew that's everything I'll ever want. I'm the luckiest man in the world, and you make me happier than anyone has any right to be. The last thing I want to say is this. People always say we should count our blessings, and I've tried and tried and tried. But as soon as I get to one, there's nowhere left to go. Because, Emma Ford, you're the only blessing I'll ever need." Emma tried not to cry and almost succeeded. She was glad she had gone first, at least, knowing now that she otherwise couldn't have gotten many words out without blubbering. Under the watchful eyes of the warring politicians they'd brought together, and the visitors from another world they'd introduced to their own, Dan and Emma looked only at each other as they waited patiently for the I do's. They felt at home among the friends and family who had helped them through so much, from Henry, Phil, and Mr. Bird, to the quiet but loyal Timo Fiore, as well as the friendly faces of Billy Kendrick and Trey Myers, who were visiting from well out of town. And if such a bright future wasn't coming their way, they would have wished to freeze this perfect moment in time. The crystal clear sky overhead would come alive as an ocean full of stars when the day turned to night and the party kicked into gear, and there was nowhere either of them would rather be than under it together. When they both said, "I do," Dan felt like pinching himself to make sure he wasn't dreaming. Another part of him didn't want to take the risk just in case he really was. Such was the disbelieving gratitude he felt in the moment. With the verbal commitments made and barely a dry eye to be seen, only one thing remained. At the edge of a cornfield, where everything had changed more than once, the biggest and best change for Dan McCarthy's life was happening right now. There was no better place to make the step from one life to another, he thought. No better place to embrace a future brighter than any he'd ever dreamed possible. This thought, and every other, was soon consumed by the warmth that flooded over him as Emma Ford's lips parted only slightly, and she whispered two words as they moved in for the kiss. #blessed.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Not Alone, The Final Call, written by Craig A. Falconer, performed by James Patrick Cronin. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Chelsea Pita. Copyright 2019 by Craig A. Falconer. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.